So that's probably Michelle Benson. I don't know that I ever did a lecture.
We'll call the Senate Health and Human Services Finance Division to order for Wednesday, March 18th. A couple of announcements. We have five bills on the agenda today. Kind of a light load compared to what we'll be looking at next week. I think we will be meeting twice next week. And after break, again, to remind members, we will have breakneck pace to try to get all of the budget-related HHS items heard, so expect a very full schedule, very long days, and a lot of work. And then a reminder to members, work with Dennis and DHS and MDH and get your fiscal notes ready if you want to get a hearing. We've had several bills scheduled and then pulled from the agenda because the fiscal impacts weren't ready, and we're going to need to be able to move efficiently. So make sure you're ready when we call a hearing. So with that, Senate File 1349, Senator Wicklund, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I begin presentation of Senate File 1349, I would like to offer the A4 delete everything amendment.
Members have the A4 amendment in their packet. This is the first hearing, correct, Senator Wicklund?
Yes, that's correct.
This is an author's amendment. Senator Wicklund moves the A4 amendment on that. Any further questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Wicklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the delete all brings the bill into the shape that I would like it in. And this bill has to do with voluntary home visiting programs. Voluntary home visiting programs have been shown to be effective in supporting at-risk families because they meet families where they live and they adapt services to families' unique needs. This bill is requesting an appropriation to go to the Department of Health to work with the home visiting stakeholders and community health boards in order to develop recommendations for a statewide family home visiting infrastructure, which will better coordinate training, technical assistance, data reporting, evaluation, and improvement of programs across the entire state. They will also work to develop program standards to be used to provide a common framework for service delivery. Services are targeted to families at highest risk for poor health and poor academic outcomes. Currently, funding sources for family home visiting programs come from federal, state, and local governments. The report that's due by June 30th of 2016 will document the recommendations and the cost to implement this system statewide, providing access to all eligible families. Benefits of developing recommendations like this and program standards are things like they will lead to more efficient use of public resources. It will result in better coordination and communication between programs and amongst stakeholders across the state. And better identification of training needs will lead to development of training that works and builds capacity. Also, a benefit is that we can identify data collection needs and support inclusion of data in the Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System project. That work is going on in the Department of Education as part of the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge grant program. There is a fiscal note, which I believe that you have received, and that documents the expected cost according to the Department of Health. I'd like to ask my testifiers to speak now about this bill, their support, and also the work that's been underway to study best practices in other states that's helped identify the need to undertake this system development work. And go ahead.
Senator Wicklund, you visit us so often. I thought you were on the committee.
Yes.
I said that you moved the amendment.
I'm not on our committee.
So we're gonna fix that up. And I think we should stick the appropriation in here as well as we do that. It looks like $195,000.
That's correct. Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So Senator Franzen moves the oral amendment to the A4 amendment, inserting $195,000 into the blank appropriation. And with that oral incorporation, Senator Franzen moves the A4 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, now we properly have it before us. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move to your testifiers.
Yes. First, I'd like to have Cindy Toppin from the Minnesota Coalition of Targeted Home Visiting.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Cindy Toppin. I'm a consultant for LifeTrack, which is the fiscal host for the Minnesota Coalition for Targeted Home Visiting. Thanks for allowing us to testify today. The coalition is a statewide coalition that includes members of over 40 different organizations that provide home visiting services around the state. Many of you, I'm sure, are familiar with home visiting. Targeted home visiting is a service delivery strategy used to build relationships between parents and children in order to foster healthy childhood development, improving the likelihood that a child will be school ready and will not suffer maltreatment. For example, a home visitor might use this activity to demonstrate brain development to a parent. I'm going to ask my assistant to pass around my brains at this point. In the home visit, the parent actually makes both of these brains. You will feel as you pass them around that the larger brain is much bigger and heavier. This demonstrates that the child who is read to, talked to, interacted with, is more likely to have better brain development and more neural connections. This makes the concept real for parents so they understand the importance of their role as their child's first teacher. While there are many kinds of home visiting, voluntary targeted home visiting is more intensive, it's longer term, and it's focused on families with multiple risk factors such as abuse, neglect, maternal depression, poverty, chemical dependency. There are many different home visiting programs. What you're probably most familiar with in your district would be the work of public health or Early Head Start. But home visiting is also done by nonprofits, tribes, and ECFE. Programs have some common goals, but they differ in other ways. In Minnesota, there is no one common system of home visiting, and thus we don't have a consistent way to look at standards or outcomes across programs. The intent of our bill is to develop a unifying infrastructure and develop program standards for voluntary targeted home visiting that could provide a common framework for service delivery and accountability. So why do we need this? Having a unifying system that includes consistent standards, training, data collection, and evaluation will assure that Minnesota families have access to high-quality home visiting. Here are some examples of what we've learned in the last couple of years. Currently, there are no common assessments or screening done in home visiting, and data is not collected consistently across all types of home visiting programs. There's a wide diversity. It's not the same. Training isn't the responsibility of any entity. While multiple providers do this work, public health nurses, social workers, child development specialists, there is no access to consistent quality professional development. We have found through some of our coalition-sponsored trainings that rural staff and staff in small programs don't have time to go to face-to-face trainings. Modules that are self-study on their own or archive webinars work well, but there's currently no system in place to provide this. This past fall, the coalition invited experts from New Mexico to come and share their learnings because they developed a standard-based home visiting system that was integrated into their full early childhood system. Members of this committee, the Legislative Health and Human Services Committee, were invited to meet with them, and some of you were able to do that. What we learned from New Mexico was that this approach is successful, but the success requires an infrastructure to support the work of the programs. Since this fall, the coalition has done significant work on developing home visiting standards with input from all the stakeholders. Early feedback indicates a strong need for training, technical assistance, evaluation, and data collection to be able to implement such a quality-based system. Without this building block to support programming, a unified multidisciplinary system is not possible. As 85% of brain development takes place before the age of 3, a robust home visiting system is needed to meet the need and ensure access to quality services no matter where you live in Minnesota. We are hopeful that this bill will help move us towards this goal. Thank you.
Thank you. You have another testifier, Senator Wicklund,
yes,
is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Denise
Welcome
Mayo.
To the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Denise Mayat, and I'm the executive director of the Sheltering Arms Foundation, and I'm also the co-chair of the Start Early Funders Coalition, which is composed of over 27 foundations funding early childhood programs from across the state. Start Early is a member and funder of the Mini Minds Coalition, which is made up of more than 100 organizations statewide that all recognize that ensuring that our most at-risk children have access to quality early childhood programs and needs to be a top priority for the state. For the last few years, we've been advocating for early childhood scholarships for 3- and 4-year-olds and their younger siblings to allow low-income children access to high-quality early learning experiences, and we're very excited about the progress that we've made. A next step for the Mini Minds Coalition is to ensure that the youngest children are served, and after numerous discussions with our membership and the broader community, decided to support the development of an agenda around targeted home visiting. A key element of the success of the early learning scholarships that we've championed has been the development of the parent-aware quality rating and improvement system that help parents to identify high-quality child care centers to use their scholarships in.
Ms. Matt,
yes?
If you could focus on this rather
yep.
than the whole Mini Minds agenda,
right.
that would
I
be
was
helpful.
Just, I was mentioning that because okay. The parent-aware system is a way of looking at quality, and we see that the infrastructure that's being proposed is similar in terms of assuring quality, the standards that we're discussing today. As Cindy mentioned, the system is based on a model that's being used in the state of New Mexico and helps to provide alignment between the many models of home visiting currently being used in the state. It also offers guidance as to where further investment might be made in the system, and undoubtedly, such investment is needed. We believe that a first great step, however, is to institutionalize and fund the standard system that's in the process of being developed in Minnesota. And I'll add that private funders such as ourselves and the United Way have believed in this so much that we have invested funds already in the development of the system. High-quality child care combined with quality home visiting programs are a key to getting the most vulnerable children off to a good start and prepared to succeed in school and life. Thanks for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Mayat. Senator Wicklund, is that the end of your testimony?
That concludes the testimony. If there are questions, there are people here from the Department of Health if there were questions relating to that.
We might have some. I mean, I know that this is a proposal. I think it was for a little bit more money last year. And, you know, some of the questions around it. So I'm listening to the New Mexico model and things like that. And the things that are needed are infrastructure, training, technical assistance, data collection. But it sounds like there are existing models, and we're not investing this $200,000 to do any of these things that are needed. It's to develop a model that, I mean, it sounds like there are existing models, and we're, you know, we're not going to get any home visiting out of this investment. We're going to get a proposal to spend money later on home visiting, and so I just need you to dig into that a little bit, and I might like to ask MDH to come forward and help us gain some insights into why we would need to invest in recreating a model that sounds like exists. And I think we're all big supporters of family home visiting and understand the benefits that accrue to our youngest children.
Mr. Chair, welcome
to the committee. Yes,
can
Senator
I just
Wicklund.
Make a comment before? One of the differences, I think, is that it is to focus on developing program standards, and that is something that, while there are models in other states, I think Minnesota would want to develop the standards that meet the needs of our state, which may differ from other states, how they've developed them. And I don't think that we would be able to take existing standards and just say, okay, that's what's going to be used. I think this needs to be a communication process, a negotiation process with programs that are in place to make sure that the standards that we come up with meet the needs of programs that are all across the state. And I'll let MDH, they can provide more information.
About across the different programs?
Maybe I can address, you know, the differences of the models across. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Sorry, members of the committee. There are many different models that you may have heard of that follow certain fidelity standards on a national basis. And those are terrific models, and they would be grandfathered into any standards. But those folks still need ongoing training and professional development. And it still leaves Minnesota without a standard system and no overall data collection. There are also many counties where they cannot afford to do the model-based system, especially in greater Minnesota. And then we also see that some of the models would not necessarily be able to serve two-year-olds in child protection. And we also want to be sure that whatever we come with is culturally specific so that organizations that are currently serving culturally specific populations, particularly the reservations or in the inner city, that they have a vehicle for perhaps getting ongoing funding as well. And right now, they just will never be able to afford the models because they cost a lot.
So, Ms. Toppin, I mean, I think that's a little circular. I mean, you're saying that we need to invest in training and professional development and data collection, and this doesn't do that.
But it will get it.
And we need, you know, I need to understand what this does and make sure that we are using our. So, I mean, what I hear you're saying is we're going to spend $200,000 to develop a plan to spend a lot more. And that's, you know, I mean, we just need to work on that. And I'd like to see if we can get to a place where we can put together a plan without, you know, spending this money. We have very limited resources, and so we need to push. This is sort of our job in HHS. It's not a fun job, but we have to do it well. Welcome to the committee. Maybe you can explain from MDH's perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Susan Castellano, and I'm with the Minnesota Department of Health. And the standards, I think, as you mentioned, there are models that are out there, NFP, HFA. I think this is really designed to help those that can't, as Cindy said, use the models to develop some standards. Home visiting has been evolving over the last, I would say, 20 years from simply public health nurses going out and doing the best they can to really putting some science to it. I think this is an opportunity to bring some of that science to those who can't afford to buy into, for lack of a better term, the models that exist out there, and to provide some standards whether someone's receiving these services through ECFE or through public health or some other home visiting organization, that there's a place for them to look about what constitutes best practice. So that's what the standard development would be.
And MDH would require this money to develop those standards, pull the stakeholders together.
Mr. Chair, yes, members of the committee, that's correct. This would be a one-time appropriation for us to pull those folks together. And as many have alluded to here, some of that work has already been done on behalf of the coalition. That's why the fiscal note's less than you saw last year. Some of that work's already been done.
So if we didn't fund it this year, would the coalition
fund
the balance of it? I mean,
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, you know, MDH has not officially been charged with doing this work, and I think that's the difference here.
Okay. Any other questions of members? Senator Franzen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Wicklund, thank you for bringing this forward, and I was one of those legislators who attended the meeting in the interim, and we heard about the New Mexico model, which is very fascinating. They do have a different demographic, but they have a statewide program, and I think it's one or two visits that every new parent is entitled to, if for lack of a better word, through the program. Certainly, we're not half there yet at all. So I do support the concept of getting the infrastructure ready. I share the concern in terms of the funding that we are limited to. There is another bill as well that I have as well to fund some targeted home visiting as well. So there's a lot of movement here, and I think there's certainly something we can do as a committee, perhaps, and maybe we can work on how this could be more efficiently funded. But I think it's important to consider it and to work with your department, DHS, to be able to, or Department of Health, to be able to support this in the future, because I think there's a lot of benefits. And as you said, it's evolved over time, and there's a lot more evidence-based that are programs that are out there that we should be able to support, because at the end it might save us money. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Yep. And that's, I didn't want that to be lost either in our kind of pushing on the expenditure. Home visiting is incredibly valuable to particularly at-risk new parents and the children. And I think all of us are big supporters of the benefits that accrue. Right? Ms. Stoppin, it looked like you had something additional to add.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that the total budget for the coalition is $75,000, so I don't think we'll be able to help the department with developing a statewide training system, for example. But we have been the catalyst behind a lot of this work already, working with the department and with the Department of Ed about what these standards could be, and then realize that we can't just set up some standards and then not have, for example, just the training that people need, and there is no training system. And so somebody has to design what the training needs are and what that system would be before we could implement a standards-based approach. And even any new home visiting money that goes in will still fall into that realm where there is no home visiting training system.
Okay. Any other questions of members? Senator Sharon?
Thank you. This is an important program, and so the resources going to the program is something that we're working on a lot for all programs, especially as it relates to high-risk children and families that are struggling in order to create environments that are encouraging developmental processes rather than creating toxic stress. So it's important, I think, that we fund the capacity of the visitors to get into these homes. And so I join Senator Lori in making sure that what we spend that does unnecessary duplicative work, because as we look through the Child Protection Task Force recommendations, funding these programs is that are terribly underfunded in terms of our overall goals is going to strain our budget. So I'm supportive of this program. I'm hoping that it stays very true to its promise to be culturally sensitive and to develop a workforce that reflects the population that they're serving.
Any other questions or comments of members? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1349? Seeing none, Senator Franzen moves that Senate File 1349, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Budget Bill. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Wickland.
Thank you, Senator Lori, and committee members.
Senator Hayden, Senate File 316.
And members, I have Senate File 316, the Healthy Eating Here at Home Bill. First of all, I'd like to give my thanks to Senator Rosen for the help when the bill was originally presented. As a result of a robust discussion in Senator Sharon's committee, I have a delete all amendment that I hope addresses some of the concerns that were raised in the policy committee. So, Ms. Chair, I'd like to move the A6 amendment.
Senator Hayden, maybe you could step us through it. This being the second committee, it wouldn't be characterized as an author's amendment, so maybe you can just describe the bill, incorporate, you know, the A6 amendment. It's a delete all, so if you just describe it, and then we'll take action on your motion.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, The A6 amendment establishes a grant program to provide incentives to low-income Minnesotans that use the SNAP program benefits for purchases at Minnesota Farmers Market. The Commissioner of Human Services is required to allocate the grants to a nonprofit organization that works with farmers markets to provide a voucher to SNAP participants and award grants based on nonprofit submitted plans for voucher distribution that demonstrates how the nonprofit will achieve geographic balance. The eligible households that receive the voucher must be informed of the allowable uses of the voucher, which is for healthy purchases at a farmer's market. The nonprofit must report annually to the commissioner with information regarding the program. It's $1 million a year appropriation for the program that is established in this bill. To address the concerns expressed when the bill is heard in HHS policy, the following modifications are incorporated in the A6. Update references to SNAP eligibility and the definition of a Minnesota-based farmer's market caps. The vouchers at $10 clarifies that the funds cannot be used for healthy cooking classes or food education outreach and caps administrative costs at 3% of the appropriation. The amendment also adds a subdivision requiring the commissioner to submit a waiver request to the federal government to allow SNAP participants to use vouchers for healthy produce at grocery stores, which was kind of the major piece of the change.
Any questions on the A6 amendment? I think we need to, on line 1.18, strike the word allocate and insert the word award. Those terms actually have different meanings that are important, and I think you meant award grants.
Yes.
Okay. So Senator Hayden moves the A6 amendment with that oral amendment to it. Any other questions, comments? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. So I guess we've had the description of the bill. Senator Hayden, did you wish to provide additional testimony?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we did get a description of the bill, and I have John Randolph of Hunger Solutions and Judy Cook from the Mazone Advocacy Project that would like to testify.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, whichever.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is John Randolph. I'm the SNAP Outreach Associate at Hunger Solutions Minnesota, and I really appreciate the opportunity to testify today. At Hunger Solutions Minnesota, we believe that increasing access to and affordability of healthy food is in the best interest of all Minnesotans, especially those with low incomes. Healthcare costs related to chronic illness that can be managed by diet changes are increasing, and we believe that making healthy choices more accessible can improve health outcomes in our state. However, fresh fruits and vegetables can be expensive, and despite a recovering economy, SNAP enrollment has not decreased significantly, with over 495,000 SNAP recipients statewide receiving, on average, $111 per month. It's why we are excited to support Senate File 316. Healthy Eating Here at Home is a proven program based on Market Bucks, a partnership between Blue Cross Center for Prevention and DHS since 2011. We're asking for a $1 million annual appropriation from the DHS budget for $10 matching vouchers, which can be spent on fresh fruits and vegetables by SNAP participants who use benefits at farmers markets. This bill would allow for approximately 90,000 vouchers to be used at markets around the state. SNAP use at farmers markets has increased 240% between 2011 and 2013, with another 14% increase in 2014. At the end of last year, there were 59 market sites participating in Market Bucks, with an equal distribution between Greater Minnesota and the metro area. Those sites saw 16,000 EBT transactions totaling $185,000 and $71,500 redeemed in Market Bucks. This program is an integral step to address healthy food access in Minnesota and supplement our emergency food system. Whether you live in Bemidji or down the street in Frogtown, Senate File 316 helps low-income families and farmers make the best use of federal dollars. Hunger Solutions has a 15-year track record of distributing grants from DHS to our food shelf members. We also helped to administer the Nutrition Education Program with Children's Defense Fund and the St. Paul Freedom Schools. This program used a similar market voucher system and had about an 85% participation rate and high satisfaction among families. Parents who participated in the program said it helps to bridge the gap in my summer budget, and because of the Nutrition Education Program, I have more fresh produce in my home. There should be a list of our supporters circulating, and I wanted to end with a quote from one of the Minnesota Food Helpline callers. This gentleman's from Minneapolis, and he speaks on the benefits of the Market Bucks program. I feel better, have lost weight, gained muscle, have more energy, exercise more, which is directly correlated to Market Bucks and being able to use my EBT card at farmers markets. Even my family has noticed a change. There's nothing like locally grown broccoli. I can feel it in my body. It also just feels so positive being in that environment and being a part of the community. I don't feel stigmatized or looked down upon. I do enjoy talking with the vendors and looking around at options, which also makes being at the farmers markets a social engagement. Not to mention, after SNAP cuts, it's a really nice way to allow myself more money to spend on food. Thank you very much.
Mr. Randolph, thank you for that quote. That was a good one. As a farmer myself, I love to hear people talking about the benefits of good food. Ms. Cook, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Judy Cook, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Mazon, a Jewish Response to Hunger, which is a national anti-hunger advocacy group that I represent on a pro bono basis. Mazon works to ensure that hungry people have access to nutritious food today and develop long-term solutions so that no one goes hungry tomorrow. We see this program as having three important benefits for low-income Minnesotans. It will enhance food security by extending purchasing power when buying food at a farmer's market, promotes healthy eating by providing an incentive to buy healthy food, where they will have greater access to fresh and locally produced food, and of course, as you've seen, also will extend to grocery stores if the waiver is approved, and it supports local farmers who produce and market food at farmers markets. As you've heard, it has a proven track record of success. I will just give you some statistics from a similar program in Michigan that had results reported at a national anti-hunger conference in just a couple weeks ago. What they found in Michigan was that 93% of SNAP participants who received benefits in the state's program reported eating more fruits and vegetables, 83% reported eating fewer low-nutrition, high-calorie snacks, 93% reported that price, quality, and selection were better at a farmer's market. It's an example of the kind of practical, results-oriented, common-sense programs that can have an impact on reducing hunger in our state. We are pleased to join with all of the other groups that you see on the information there. And also, I do hope you'll read some of the quotes from people from around the state who've really found the program to be very beneficial. Thank you for allowing me to testify on behalf of Mazon today, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Cook. Any questions of members?
No, it should be more custom.
Okay. Seeing none, Senator Hayes, Senator Sharon, I guess. No, anyone else in the audience wish to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 316? Seeing none, Senator Hayden, any last words? Senator Hayden moves Senate File 316 as amended be recommended to pass and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus bill. On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Senator
members.
Hayden. Senator Hayden, Senate File 275, is that correct?
That's correct. Mr. Chair members, I have Senate File 275. This legislation would allow North Memorial to continue and expand the work they've been doing the last few years around ACO modeling in the Medicaid and Medicare world. This legislation would allow North Memorial to partner with third-party administrator, if they wish, and bid into the 2016 Medicaid procurement process. North Memorial began the journey of successfully managing contracting risk and care coordination with Medicaid populations when the legislature turned the North Memorial HCMC Regions Hospital to implement the CCDS coordinated care population when the legislature eliminated GAMC, if that's enough acronyms for you members. With me today is Mr. Buck McAlpin of North Memorial and Justin Bondi, Manager of Governor and Health Care Programs, to further testify on the bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin, Director of Government Affairs, North Memorial. Dr. Croston apologizes. He's been testifying through this and the other committees. Could not make it today. He has some surgical commitments this morning. But we'd just like to thank the committee for their time. I brought Mr. Bondi with that does our managed care contracting and work with us. This is something we've worked on internally the last year with all of our healthcare transformation committees and our care coordination committees to be prepared to go in this direction as we've looked at our large population of medical assistance grow and how we survive as a healthcare system financially and most importantly meet the needs of our Medicaid populations and other populations as we integrate our commercial market, our Medicare market, and all of our state government and federal government payer programs into care coordination models. We've really grown our community paramedic model that this committee has been very supportive of, and we feel that we've put a lot of those tools in place to make that happen, working with all of our partners as we look at being able to do it this year or next year or whenever we feel we're ready to move forward with a model like this. So I guess at this point we just stand for questions, unless Mr. Bondi has anything he'd want to say, Mr. Chair, up front.
Mr. Bondi, did you have something to add?
I have no comment to make right now. Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Any questions of members? You know, I know we had a discussion in HHS policy, not everybody overlaps, about whether this might fit better in one of the existing pilot projects in Hennepin County and whether this could just be incorporated into that. I take it that idea didn't gain any traction, it looks like.
Mr. Chair, no. I think we'd like it to stay the way it is if we could.
Okay. In reading the fiscal note assumptions, I see that there's MDH would have costs if this were to be organized similar to an HMO in the organization in which they would, you guys would move forward, and that is allowed under this. You would be able to construct this pilot in such a manner so as to require that type of regulation. And so there's kind of a, there's a zero fiscal note here, but they go into the assumptions and say, but if you chose that option, there would be costs for regulating that new entity that you would use. Is there a possibility or a desire to move in a direction where you would need that oversight?
No, I believe that the Senator Chair,
please state your name for the record.
My name is Justin Bondi, Manager of Managed Care Administration at North Memorial. Thank you for the question. No, we do not see any additional costs that would be associated with this. This would be handled in much the same way that that the managed care organizations are handling this, where we would be contracting with, on a per member per month basis for the coverage of the members that we would be treating.
You would contract with existing MCOs. You wouldn't become a new one that would require the regulation. Is that
at that point, we have, Chair, we have not determined which partner we would partner with at this point.
But you wouldn't become a new one yourself to do this work and take on that.
We would work with an existing partner.
Okay. Any further questions of members? Seeing none, is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 275? Seeing none, Senator Hayden, you wish to make a motion?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, it's a good bill, and I'd like to move Senate File 275 to be laid over. Is it what
we could? There is no fiscal. We can lay it over. I mean, I think it would be pretty easy to pick up off the table. We could continue discussions, or I think it could go on its own as well. I don't know the status of this in the House.
Mr. Chair, it was laid over in the House.
Okay.
Possible inclusion.
Probably the best route then.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, with that, I'd like to move Senate File 275 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS omnibus finance bill.
On that motion, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Hayden. Next, we have Senate File 1152, Senator Eakin.
Chair and members, Senate File 1152 is a bill dealing with the Text for Life program, and in 2013, there was a legislative appropriation for $625,000 annually in the base of this program. What this bill does is it's an expansion to that program to provide, it requests an additional $1.5 million annually for the purposes of expanding this program statewide. And it would provide immediate, easily accessible crisis response through a single statewide number. It would allow for 22 FTEs. 8 of those would be responders, 14 regional coordinators. It would ensure that every MinSCU school in the state would have this program, and it would be offered at orientation to students. All secondary, the goal is to have all secondary and middle school. Middle schools also have access to this program. I think it's important to note that it would be integrated and would have opportunity for integration of referrals and interventions with local mobile crisis teams, school counselors, community health centers, and local county public health. This program allows for communication in a way that the younger generation feels comfortable with. It also allows for the ability to be discreet and private. It allows for instantaneous response. This would expand to a 24-hour service for young people to be able to text and get an immediate response. And again, it would expand this program to 64 counties that currently do not have this. And I think it's important to note also that with the increase in the amount and the rate of suicide in our state, this is especially important and critical that we have this service available to everyone across the state. And with that, I do have two people here who would like to testify to the bill, Mark Coopy, who is the CEO of Canvas Health, and Nathan Hart, who is a paramedic.
Okay. Senator Eakin, I was just reading the bill as you were going to, and I noticed that it says that it's to expand the statewide text messaging suicide prevention program. I think that maybe, and I'll let you think about it while we hear other testimony, but I think it might be expand the text messaging suicide prevention program statewide, because it's not a statewide program right now. So, I mean, I think there might just be a technical wording issue that we can work on. Mr. Coopy, welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Mark Coopy. I am a licensed psychologist and the CEO of Canvas Health. Canvas Health is an organization that operates Crisis Connection, which is a 24-hour, 365-day-a-year crisis call center, which is where we provide the text messaging response system through a DHS contract referred to as Text for Life. In 2013, the Department of Health for Minnesota reported 683 deaths by suicide. This was the 9th leading cause of death in the state, and it's the 2nd leading cause of death for 15 to 24-year-olds. That's 6 times higher than homicide and also twice the number of deaths by car accidents. Suicide continues to be a great concern throughout the state because suicide is preventable. In 2013, you provided startup funding for this new and progressive alternative to suicide and mental health crisis prevention. With that 2013 legislative appropriation, we started serving 23 counties, mostly in one-third of the northern part of the state, and we staffed it from noon until midnight, 7 days a week. In 2013, we provided responses to 3,480 text conversations. At the end of 2014, that had increased to 62% of 5,658. I am aware right now that of this year, we're leaning towards moving to 10,000 texts already. We constantly get requests from counties, school districts, and colleges to provide Text for Life in their area or school. So with this expansion request, as Senator Eakin indicated, we want to increase coverage to 24/7, as well as expand it to the middle schools, high schools, and the other 64 counties. Text for Life has already been rolled out at St. Cloud State University and Bemidji State University, and we presently have 10 counties in southwestern Minnesota and 5 counties in eastern central Minnesota ready to come on board with the approval of this expansion. It's important to remember that Text for Life is about both prevention and intervention. The prevention component is about education, training, awareness, and understanding risk for suicidal behavior that then is presented to middle schools, high schools, and colleges by our regional coordinators. At the end of the presentation, students are asked to get out their phones and place the Text for Life number into them. Now they have one number at their fingertips available for them or their friends when they need it. The intervention component.
Mr. Coopy, I think it might be your phone that's providing, now that you're waving it around.
Sorry.
I think it might be that's providing the feedback. We're trying to figure that out.
At least I wasn't getting a text. The intervention component is about what we can do at critical moments in time. There's a 5 to 10 minute window where someone has usually moved from being a risk for suicide to being in a suicidal crisis. In that moment of crisis, we know that having someone immediately available to them is the most critical opportunity we have to save a person's life. Making someone available virtually anytime and anywhere throughout the state can be achieved through this expansion bill. It's no longer a question about how important smartphones and texting are to young adults in this culture. The question now is, how can we best use what we know about their patterns of communication to offer immediate, accessible support, intervention, and services? Text for Life has been an important access point for youth and young adults to reach out and get services, many of them for the first time. With this expansion bill, a touch of one button on your phone can bring you in contact with a trained crisis counselor immediately and virtually anywhere in the state. I ask you, please support this expansion bill and contribute to saving the next 600 lives at risk for suicide in Minnesota. Thank you.
Mr. Coopy, thank you. Mr. Hart, is that correct?
That's correct.
Welcome to the committee. State your name again for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nathan Hart. I've been in EMS for about 20 years, 15 of those with my current employer in Stillwater. Over the course of those years, I've seen the aftermath of suicide. I've taken care of and transported many people who have attempted to harm themselves in some way, and I've listened to those who are thinking about doing that as well. I don't want to sound callous, but up until December 26th of 2013, those were just people who I didn't really know, and it was just part of the job. The day after Christmas 2013, my family and I were driving home from some post-Christmas shopping when I received a call from a friend of mine and co-worker asking if I had talked with another co-worker, Sean. Sean was my best friend at the time and paramedic partner of about 10 years. She told me that she thought Sean might be suicidal. At first, I just shrugged it off, thinking that she might be blowing something out of proportion. After all, this was Sean, and I've known him what seemed like forever. But as luck, or maybe bad luck, would have it, we were driving pretty much past his house, so I told her I would turn around and go see if he was all right. I was the one that found him lying at the bottom of his stairs, dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Since then, I've found a new mission in life, and that is to help us paramedics, police officers, who my wife happens to be one of, and the firefighters feel like it's okay to talk about things that we see and that might be burdening us from the jobs that we have to do, because sometimes I guess the helpers need help too. Partnering with Canvas Health and seeing all the great work and the passion that they have has given me that encouragement that Sean's death won't be in vain and will certainly mean something. The Text for Life program obviously won't bring back my good friend, but having the funding to expand it would certainly be of great service to those of us out there who might be too strong to ask for help face-to-face. I'd like to think of myself, I guess, young in mind, and this isn't just for those young people out there who are texting. You know, we text too, and it is sometimes embarrassing, I guess, to ask for that help. Thank you again for your time and consideration of this bill.
Mr. Hart, thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions of members? Senator Eakin, we have one more testifier listed. Did you have another testifier?
Mr. Chair, they were unable to make it, so.
They weren't able to make it, okay. Any other questions of members? Senator Eakin, did you want to try to fix up that sentence?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Did you did my idea work, moving statewide to the end of that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that makes sense.
Okay. So Senator Eakin moves on line 1.9, strike the word statewide, and before the period, insert the word statewide. I think that would be fairly clear. On that motion, any questions? Any other ideas about how to structure it better? Happy.
Well, I'm just looking, Senator, at another Senate file that also relates to suicide. It's a suicide training appropriation, and it's a bill that I have that's coming through Health and Human Services. There's also an appropriation in that bill for 1.5 appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Health for a grant to a nonprofit organization to establish, implement a statewide text message suicide prevention program. So it's repeated in this bill what is being proposed, and I don't know if this language is any better.
Well, this says to expand the statewide text message suicide prevention program, and there isn't a statewide text messaging system program is kind of my point. I mean, so it's not constructed quite properly. Senator Benson?
Mr. Chair, perhaps delete the.
Okay. So, Senator Sharon, I'm told by counsel, yours goes to the Department of Health, this one goes to the Department of Human Services. Is that the distinction between the two?
You know, thinking that this was very familiar to me, so I started to look back at the language.
You know, we can fix this later.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair,
if I pick this up off the table, I'll make sure that the sentence is structured properly. We can...
And Mr. Chair, to the Commissioner of Health.
Senator Eakin?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Coopy said that he could respond to this question.
Mr. Coopy?
Mr. Chair and committee members, there is an overlap here between a bill that was being brought forward by NAMI also, and NAMI included us as part of it, and we brought this as a separate bill, but they are the same issue. And so we're talking about the same texting program moving to a statewide service.
Senator Sharon.
And it's correct that this is money that goes to the Commissioner of Health in this bill that I'm bringing forward.
So we're not going to do both, but
no.
we'll figure it out.
Just have to decide where the money comes from.
Mr. Chair, the present contract is under DHS, and so that's
right.
One of the existing ones, so we
right.
would expand that contract through DHS.
I remember the discussion well, trying to figure out the right place for it 2 years ago. Senator Benson, did you have additional?
Mr. Chair, the sentence... If you're going to fix it, we need to delete the article "the" as well.
Well, there is a text message suicide prevention program, but it's fine. We'll fix it up.
Yeah,
I think it's fairly technical. If we pick it up, we'll make sure the sentence is right. Are you comfortable with that, Senator Eakin?
Mr. Chair, yes,
move it without amendment.
And withdraw your amendment, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Yes, I withdraw my amendment.
And, Mr. Chair, there is one other person that would like to testify.
Okay.
Just came forward.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Monica Shevick, and Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm a friend of Nate's, and my son's name was Sean, and he was the person Nate was speaking of earlier. John was a wonderful person, a critical care paramedic, as Nate is. What I'd like to say about Canvas Health, or about the Text for Life, is I know suicide, depression, mental health is something that may always be fatal, but it's fatal way too many more times than it needs to be, and there's so much more help out there. With the Text for Life program, I really feel strongly that if that would have existed for Sean, he was almost 40 when he passed away. It isn't just for the young people. I think it would help tremendously the person that was on the phone with Sean that day texting if that would have existed. And I just would like to stress how much of a gift that would have been for him and for so many others. So thank you for all your help with mental health.
Ms. Shevick, thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 1152? Seeing none, is there any further questions of members? Seeing none, Senator Eakin moves that Senate File 1152 be recommended to pass and laid over for possible inclusion in the HHS Omnibus Bill. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Eakin.
And Mr. Chair and members.
Last on the agenda, we have Senate File 513, Senator Herr, and I understand we have a video, so it might take a couple of seconds to get this set up.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. Thank you for listening to
Senator Herr.
Thank you for hearing Senate File 513. It's about mobile food shelf. There's a growing number of people in Minnesota who experience barrier accessing to food shelves due to mobility issue, disabilities, lack of transportation, and being far from local food shelves. By delivering foods directly to apartments, buildings, churches, community colleges, and low-income neighborhoods, mobile food shelf programs increase access to nutritious food for people. In my district, I have heard from community center, local churches, people about the need of expanding the mobile food shelf programs, and I'm sure many of you hear from your district as well. So working with Hunger Solution, we developed this bill, Senate 5513, to address the issue and provide funding. There are several benefits to increase mobile food shelf programs. One is the cost effectiveness comparing to building more food shelf. Two is reduce the stigma for senior when we can bring food to their doorstep. And three, it's very effective in the rural area where food shelf are not nearby. Mr. Chair, member, I hope you will join me in support Senate 513 so that we can serve people throughout our state. And we have a video and also have two testifiers, Mr. Peter Wiltok from Hunger Solution and Byron Leher from SEED.
So Senator Herr, do you wish to do the video first or the testifiers?
I'll leave it to Mr. Wiltok.
Get out the way.
Hunger Solution.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Peter Wiltok, community organizer with Hunger Solutions Minnesota. And we're just going to show a quick about 30-second video just to give an idea of how this program makes an impact.
All right. And, yes, exactly. Turn that mic down right down next to the speaker. We're kind of low-tech here. Turn that mic right down next to the speaker on the computer, if you could.
Hopefully the new building will make some improvements in our technology.
Yeah. Maybe when we move across the street, everything will be better.
Yeah, everything will be absolutely better. Everything will be nirvana.
The microphone.
Except you're in the way of the. You have to move over.
I'm trying to not lose weight.
The microphone stand is in the way.
I can hardly walk. I can't.
Why we can't hear?
All right.
Or drive anywhere.
You can start it over if you want. We missed sort of the. If it's 30 seconds, we should.
Something like the mobile food shop. I've been diagnosed with cancer again, and I've been losing weight, and I'm trying to not lose weight, gain weight. I can hardly walk. I can hardly do anywhere going through treatment. I wouldn't be able to go or drive anywhere. My only way to get. Hopefully, something like the mobile food shelf grow and get to those people. They aren't put in a position where they have to negotiate with food as a bargaining chip.
All right.
Peter, do you want me to give a synopsis of that? Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
My name is Byron Lair. I work at CEAP, Community Emergency Assistance Programs. We operate two food shelves, one in Brooklyn Center and one in Blaine. The video that you just saw was from Catholic Charities in St. Cloud, and the woman that was pictured is a cancer victim. And when she has her cancer treatment, she can't drive, and it's difficult for her to get to a food shelf. And she's been served by the mobile bus that Catholic Charities operates up there. It's one of the things that we envision with this bill. And just real quickly, Catholic Charities bought an old minibus for about $25,000, put about $20,000 into retrofitting it, and now take it around the St. Cloud area to senior high-rises, to apartment buildings, community centers, churches, et cetera, to deliver food to people who cannot access the shelf, like the young lady that you saw just a minute ago.
Okay. Mr. Roytak?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Yeah, and we just wanted to kind of just show the impact that this program makes, and Senator Herr already summed up quite well some of the reasons why mobile food shelf programs now exist, really to bring food to people that can't access your local traditional food shelves. And this is really kind of the direction that we see food access going here in the future. We at Hunger Solutions Minnesota work with several mobile food programs that distribute to low-income housing units, apartment buildings, churches, and schools across the state. We currently have 9 mobile food shelf providers distributing over 1 million pounds of food to over 50,000 individuals throughout the state, but we've seen those needs grow quite a bit. And so we've heard this from our food shelf partners and community organizations across the state. In the Catholic Charities example, they've already heard a lot of feedback from their community in low-income neighborhoods and apartment buildings about the needs, about growing that program. And so that's a trend that we've heard from a lot of food shelves here recently. And so in order to expand and reach the additional people that are in need of this service, more funding is needed for these food shelves. And that's exactly what this bill, Senate File 513, would do, is give the funding to these food shelves to give them the resources they need to either start a program or expand their existing programs that they have. And so the money is set up to go through Hunger Solutions Minnesota, distribute as competitive grants. This is something we already do with our food shelf grant contract that was mentioned earlier with the Department of Human Services, where we distribute around $2.5 million a year to food shelves across the state, and we have a track record of 15 years of doing that work. So mobile food shelves are really a hunger relief, a tool that can be expanded throughout Minnesota. We can be a model for the rest of the nation. And this would be a great step toward alleviating hunger for many seniors and others experiencing barriers to getting to their local food shelf, not only here in the metro, but throughout greater Minnesota as well. So we encourage you to support this bill, and thank you for the opportunity.
Senator Herr, Ms. Wojtak, I just did the calculation. So the maximum grant award would be $75,000 with the $2 million appropriation. If every single entity got the maximum grant, this would be 26 entities. Are there expected to be 26 or more applicants, assuming some don't get the full grant award? Is that
if correct? If I can, Mr. Chair and members, again, Byron Lair from CEAP. We're estimating that we'd probably average around $50,000 per grantee, because towards the end of the bill, it's a competitive process, and we're encouraging local involvement, including financially. We're estimating that the $2 million would probably support about 40 of these mobile food shelves being developed. They're one-time grants. And the idea is that the local community would be supporting this to continue it. One of the things we know about our food shelves around the state is that they're pretty darn good at resourcing food and getting volunteers. What they don't have access to a lot is the capital to acquire a vehicle, retrofit it, and then put it out on the streets. It's obviously a lot cheaper than finding a lot of locations to set up a food shelf and then have the refrigeration capacity. but they need the startup costs. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Senator Brown, you had a question?
Yes, and Mr. Chair, kind of to your question, it just made me think, does all of the $2 million go directly toward grants, or is some of it allowed to go towards administrative costs for Hunger Solutions?
Senator Herr?
Senator Brown, I appreciate your question. My understanding that it will go to a grant. I'll let Mr. Leher explain a little bit more.
Actually, I want to punt to Peter and the Hunger Solutions folks.
Mr. Wojtak?
Yep, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we would have a 3% administrative fee for distributing the grants, and this is something we already do with the grant process we do with the Department of Human Services as well. So.
I guess I don't see that allowable in here. Is that allowable somewhere else in statute, that administrative fee? I mean, maybe.
Yes, I think it's.
Not fee, but administrative cost associated with it. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think under the section 256E34, I think it's listed under that.
Under that reference under that statute, that you have the ability to use up to 3% of the grant awards for administratively doing the competitive bidding. Senator Sharon?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Laurie. The other thing, I was looking at this because we had another grant proposal related to Let's Talk Now, which is about, if you remember in the committee, it's about the early conversations about how one wants to live their lives towards the last quarter. And one of the things we talked about there, and I thought it was really a good recommendation, was from Senator Rosen, which was to add something that gives us a chance to see the outcomes of this grant, including the number of grants that were distributed, how much leverage funding might have happened as a result of this grant appropriation, then the areas throughout the state geographically that participated. And so I would just recommend, Senator, that some of those, that it wouldn't be unreasonable for us to ask for some feedback to the chair of this committee as to how this was distributed, where, how many served, outcomes from this kind of an investment. I'd like to see something like that added, that there's a report back to us on certain components or outcomes.
I think that's a Senator Herr?
Senator Sharon and Mr. Chair, I welcome that. If you can compose a language, whether it's here or later.
And then
I would encourage you to offer the language. I don't know if I would be. This will be considered laid on the table.
This
probably
will be laid on the table.
So it could be added later.
Senator Herr, if you're open to that, we can try to work on language collaboratively to get there. I think one of the things, if we're expecting up to 40 grantees around the state, you know, the geographic distribution will be important, but also, you know, really the ability for them to take this one-time cost and build a program that is sustainable. I mean, that seems like a very large number of organizations. Maybe I'm missing something, but I'd like to see that really these one-time costs actually do result in organizations that are able to have that ability to sustain into the future. And so I'd like to incorporate that as well into the report back, how that looked, and maybe look at it again in a couple of years. I think we did have Senate Counsel look it up and see the reference. Ms. White?
Mr. Chair and members, under 256E.34, this is regarding the administrative costs, subdivision 4. It says 96% of the appropriation must be used for the grants, so it looks as though they have 4% for admin costs.
Okay. That's helpful.
That's better for Hunger Solutions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. any other questions of members?
Fishbach.
Senator Fishbach. You never ask a question, Fishbach. I call you Michelle on the phone.
Yeah, I know. I kind of saw the Michelle coming out.
I was trying to be helpful, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the help.
and we're about the same age, so yes. I know.
This is a little
it's hard.
But Mr. Chair, and I think it was Mr. Is it Wotak or you had mentioned, I think that you said how many mobile programs there were, and did I hear 9 existing? Is that correct?
Yes, correct, Mr. Chair.
Wotak.
And then, Mr. Chair, Mr. Wotak, how many are in rural Minnesota, and why isn't there any requirement here that at least a portion of this be spent in rural Minnesota? Because potentially this could all go to the metro.
Mr. Wotak?
Mr. Chair, Senator, that's a great question, and it's something we are working hard with our food shelves to expand beyond the metro to many rural areas as well. And so one example of a mobile, we have a total of 9 mobile food shelf programs, most of them in the metro. There is one in St. Cloud. There is one, Family Pathways, that is in Chisago and Ashanti counties. So that is the closest we have now to serving rural communities. But we're working on with other food shelves. There's Western Community Action in Southwest Minnesota that's also looking into the idea of mobile food programs as well. So that's something we want to expand it throughout the state.
Mr. Chair and
Senator Fischbach.
Yes, Senator Herr, I would suggest that we do something. You know, if you're going to be working on some language, maybe some of this should be committed to rural Minnesota because there's need there. And, you know, for most of them right now are in the metro. So I'd like to see us, you know, work on that. But I also have some questions about kind of the requirements for the grants. And it says priority may be given. Okay, so usually, you know, I guess that's a little loose. I'm just saying that. But I'm wondering, what is in number 4 on line 2.3, what is evidence, I guess, of strong support for the project from citizens and other institutions? What would be considered that evidence?
Mr. Wotak?
Mr. Chair, Senator, evidence would be, you know, having community meetings with folks, let's say, at a local apartment building that are in need of the service and showing that the people there support and would benefit from the program, for example.
Senator Fischbach? I think your geographic issue is probably a good one, and it might fit either on number 1, where it says serve underserved areas. It could include geographically diverse or under number 3, serve areas where a high amount of need is identified. We could stick geography in either of those.
Well, and Mr. Chair,
Senator Fischbach,
given that it is available until expended, I mean, so that means it could take them a couple of years to get everything in place. I mean, I'd like to actually see a portion of it dedicated, you know, at least half has to go to rural Minnesota or something to that effect, or, you know, something to that effect. I'd like a little more concrete because some of this is kind of, you know, the May and the evidence, and it's not very concrete. And so I'd like to see us actually, you know, put in there something to the effect of going to rural Minnesota since they have the opportunity.
Okay. Senator Brown. Oh, Senator Herr.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Fischbach, I'm open to that as well. Mr. Lehrer, here I have a comment to make.
Mr. Chair and Senator.
Mr. Lehrer.
We've been discussing this with food shelves around the state, as you might imagine, and we have a list of communities that have expressed interest, and I'll just run through Rogers, St. Paul, Northern Anoka County, Elk River, Woodbury, Egan, Chisago and Ashanti, Kenyon, Bemidji, Big Lake, Echo, Ely, are communities that have been talking to us about applying for these grants. So the obvious intention is to spread this out. And we see the areas outside the immediate 7 county as being ripe for this because of the distance that people have to travel to get to a physical location.
We got Senator Brown and Senator Hayden. Senator Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for council, and it goes to Senator Sharon's question. Do we currently, does the legislature get a report on how this money ends up being used?
Mr. Chair and Senator, no, there's no report required under this provision, but I think We're going to work on language to
Senator Hurd said that that a report would be welcomed, and we can try to work on that and have a conversation in the committee about
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that I understand. I just wanted to make sure that we got a report on how all the money ended up being used. Was that a part of what Senator Sharon was requesting?
Absolutely.
Senator, just to follow up, request is that when this comes back as a part of the omnibus bill, that new language is added to this that requires a report and an articulation of what's in that report.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Hayden, and then I know Senator Benson, and Ms. White says she thinks she has some language that might work for the geographic issue. We can entertain it in a
Well, and Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Fishbach.
Just since you mentioned it, and Ms. White is working on it, I think actually it would make more sense up in the grant amount because that's a shell as opposed. Okay, then I'll wait.
I was going to say we could
she's
change the may to a shall as well on the other one. But anyway, Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that before we start to rewrite Senator Hurd's bill on the floor, that we do it in a way. I mean, this bill is to be laid over to some extent, and that there's some discussions about the need and the capacity throughout the state. I know that there's probably a need, but there's also a capacity issue relative to who has the ability to invest their investment in this process, all of the things that they would need to do a mobile food shelf. So if we start to mandate that a certain amount should go in a certain geographic area, we have to be sure that those communities have, the need I would suggest is probably there throughout the state, but that they have the capacity and they have the ability to be able to deliver the service. So I would caution us before we started to do too much rewriting of Senator Hurd's bill, though I know that it's here, that we have those discussions and that as the bill comes back, if it does come back, as we start to look at the omnibus bill, that we're doing this in a way that is pretty thoughtful of the communities that would need it and the capacity of their ability to be able to deliver it. I'm all for geographic parity, if you will, but we do know that we do have a great need in certain parts of our state that just happens to have a critical mass of people that need this. So I just wouldn't feel totally comfortable in rewriting or adding inserts into Senator Hurd's bill before we had a more robust discussion with the community that is in need of it.
Okay. One of the things that was brought up earlier, this is a one-time appropriation available until spent, and I'm actually a little uncomfortable leaving a large appropriation where we don't know that there's the capacity around the state to move from the 9 that we currently have. Some of them may be grant awardees to improve their services, but to 40 more, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, maybe up to 50 of these. I don't know that there is the capacity statewide. You have, I think I was trying to count, I think it was maybe 9 communities that are engaged in talking with you. I'm not sure that we get to, you know, 45 or 50 relatively quickly, and I don't know that we should leave a pot of money like that sitting at a nonprofit for an unending period of time. I think that we're probably going to put an end to this, you know, so that it's available for the biennium is something that I think we should discuss. Senator Benson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think, you know, having an end time for the spend is a good idea. The North Anoka County Emergency Food Shelf talked to me about this, and this is something they're working on. I just want to be, you know, in the geography wars and all of that. He talked about evidence of strong public support being meetings at apartment buildings. My district doesn't have that kind of structure to show evidence, which is why they need the mobile facilities. So we, and I know Senator Brown's district, there's great dispersals. It's not just regional centers. It's a hike from East Bethel to Linwood Township. There's not an apartment building you can meet at to show that there's a need. And so I want to make sure that there's not a bias towards existing needs being met when there are great needs, and not just in Beltrami County. But I don't want geography to be, oh, 7-county metro's okay, they don't need help. Because there are parts of the 7-county metro that do need help.
Yep.
So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Brown,
and
then
Mr.
maybe
Chair,
we can get the language.
I think obviously this bill needs some work still, but to Senator Hayden's point, $75,000 increases the capacity for many groups in rural Minnesota, where that may not go as far in the metro. That's a huge amount in rural to increase their capacity to be able to provide.
It's true, but then it brings that, you know, I mean, if this is the only capacity building, that's why we want to make sure that we really have an entity that can survive, so that we don't put $75,000 in to build capacity that just fails in 18 months. So it's, yeah,
Mr.
but
Chair,
it does
there
need some
are,
work
there are groups discussion. All over the state right now who are doing this, but
yep.
I'm saying that could greatly
yep.
increase our capacity.
Yep, it certainly could. And buy the trucks and get them, you know, the reefer unit on the truck and the shelving and the, you know, NSF. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'm not suggesting that there isn't a need and that these targeted influx of dollars couldn't do it. I'm just saying to be able to have a discussion that we kind of know what that looks like, and if it does make sense to send 75% of it out state because that's where the need is and that their capacity could be, I mean, that could really help what they do, so be it. But I just am not sure if we just put a mandate on it now without having that thoughtful discussion with the stakeholders would be the place to do it.
Ms. White, did you have Senator Fischbach, would you mind listening to the language and we can kick it around a little bit? It might help. Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and members, this is, I think, reflecting what Senator Fischbach was requesting on line page 1, line 7, before the period, insert comma, with at least 50% of the appropriation for grants in rural Minnesota.
Does rural Minnesota have a definition?
There is a definition.
Could you read that again?
I can stick in a cross-reference to it if you'd like.
Would you read it again, please, Senator Laurie?
Page 1, line 7, before the period, insert comma, with at least 50% of the appropriation for grants in rural Minnesota.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Herr.
Can Council also read out loud the definition of for rural?
I need to find it.
Yeah. That'll take a second. Maybe we can have a discussion. Senator Sharon.
Well, I have many things to say. I first of all apologize. I was thinking this was an expansion of an existing program and didn't ask for it to go through health policy, which is where we could have worked out some of these issues. So my apologies, committee. I think that if we do put a percentage in, that it might behoove us to have some earlier reporting back. What happens here is that like in the school counseling program, where we had grants to psychologists to work with in the schools, it didn't get distributed geographically. Part of the problem there was the lack of information. People in the rural, the list of the places that was described here didn't include anything in southern Minnesota. And I know there'd be a huge interest mm-hmm. in southern Minnesota to this if they knew about it. So part of the problem here is the distribution of the information that the grant is even available. How do we get that out? But in order to not tie up money on a geographic distribution, if there isn't an interest out there, if there's not a pursuit of that, or if there's money sitting around because the metro area isn't using their 50%, we got to look sooner at what's happening with the distribution so that we could adjust this if we put this into the bill. And the other thing I wanted to go back over is, are these new these grants for newly develop the mobile program, or will an existing mobile program get to use this? And then I think we should be clear that they are initiative funds. They aren't ongoing funding systems for these mobile units. And my understanding is it's to develop the unit and not for the purposes of filling them or putting food in them. It's about developing and implementing the driving of this facility, but that this is an initiative. If what I'm voting on is initiative, not an ongoing appropriation to support the mobile, and I just want to make sure that I'm understanding it. And if that needs to be more clearly said, that might be helpful in the upcoming language as well. So
Senator Sharon, A couple things. First off, we did hear it in your policy committee.
Oh, we did. Was I there?
I don't know. It says on the top here that in 3-5, the committee heard it and reported it and recommended to pass.
Talk about a memory problem, Senator.
But then also on line 2.1, it does specify specifically that it is to create a new or expand an existing mobile program. So it is for both.
Okay.
Senator Herr, any further any further discussion? I mean, I'm not I'm kind of conflicted about, I do want to see programs started up in rural. I do believe that that is the intent of this, but I don't know where these 40 programs would come from and who has the ability to do them. I think it might be an additional limitation. I mean, an alternative might be to, in awarding grants, make that rather than a May, that the evaluation shall be given preference to grant applications that have rural. I don't know. I mean, Senator Fischbach?
Mr. Chair, I understand the 50% is what's holding folks back, but really, you know, there are smaller food shelves in small towns that, given the opportunity, I think would. And given the information, I think Senator Sharon had a good point about the information. I think that they would be willing to take something like this on. And maybe it's more of an issue of making sure that everybody knows about it.
Right.
But also, you know, some of that geographic balance, because there are needs. I mean, you
Absolutely.
Serve a rural district yourself and see yep. those needs. And I don't disagree that there's a lot of miles between, I guess it was what, somewhere in Linwood Township, and but there are a lot of miles out in rural Minnesota too that people live in the country and mm-hmm. where, and even in small towns without, you know, a food shelf that is there. And so I really want to see if we're going to be doing this and this kind of mobile program, making sure that it gets into rural Minnesota. Too.
Absolutely,
so I want to ensure that.
I share your
Mr.
concern,
Chair,
Senator
Herr. I would let Mr. Leher here, you know, give us some more insight to answer to Senator Fischbach.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Senator, and other committee
Mr.
members.
Mr.
Leher. Hunger Solutions distributes the state funding for food shelves to 300 food shelves across the state of Minnesota. And this kind of information would be definitely part of any communication that they have with those 300 food shelves. So I don't think you have to worry that people won't know that this money is available. And if I can speak for Peter and his folks, our commitment is to get food to people who have transportation issues. And we want nothing more than to distribute this where there is great need.
So just to be clear, we actually do need to worry when giving out grants that they go out geographically dispersed. I mean, we really do. We see over and over and over again. We give out grants, and we ask for geographic diversity, and we don't get it. So we do need to worry. It is something that we talk about over and over and over again. I'm a little uncomfortable going so far as to stick a percentage on it, not knowing what the existence of the infrastructure. Senator Sharon?
Do you think that maybe a way to deal with this is to make a clear statement, maybe even a number 7 under the of the list of things, but to say that the expectation is for statewide and geographic distribution, and then require feedback within the first year, a deadline, as to how the grants have been distributed? That would offer us the opportunity then
to recalibrate
and maybe see if the pattern isn't what we think of as fairly distributed, then we can have a conversation again about why is that happening. It may be that the communities do not want to initiate the program. So I would hate to hold money back from another part of the state that wants the grants because they've utilized, you know, a fair share of it. So that'd be my suggestion, that we not get the percentage in there, but that we have a sooner review of how the grant is being distributed.
I'm sorry, I inserted you in front of Senator Benson. Apologies. That's Senator Benson.
She was to the point, Mr. Chair. I don't recall, did we hear a definition of rural?
No,
we haven't, but I bet we have it. Ms. White?
No, actually.
No, we don't.
Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
So that's.
I'm trying to find a good one.
Senator Lori, can I? We use the definition
Senator
of
Shannon.
Rural and super rural.
Yeah, it's.
In the deep rural. No, it's super rural in the formula for distributing funds for non-emergency medical transportation. So I know the definitions are there.
And when Senator Sharon was going over that, I heard her say super rural. I was like, that's even better than Greater Minnesota, but it wasn't. It was super rural. Anyway.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hurd, the author.
And I'm also open for the, you know, addition that Senator Sharon is proposing as well. I want to go back earlier, you know, Senator Sharon didn't propose about turning in a report. I think we kind of missed that part, whether that will be. We could certainly put that in oral amendment.
Well, I don't
here.
Know if we have
no, we don't know.
The language ready for a report, but, I mean, with your acceptance, we can work on that and we can distribute it. And if, you know, to the extent this is included in the omnibus bill, we can take a look at what the report is and make sure that it meets the committee's concerns.
And
now
then,
I'm not even sure whose phone
is. Mr. Chair, I had a second
Senator
part
Benson.
To my question, if I could. My concern with funds going until exhausted when we have existing mobile programs, it's pretty easy to just fill the existing mobile and not develop the new. And
well,
so perhaps
$75,000 limit. I mean, if there's only nine existing, you know, it's $75,000 is the maximum. So I mean, we wouldn't, you know, we'd have at least 31 left to fill if we gave each of the nine existing seven. You know, Ms. White, you had some. Oh, okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just need some clarification before we finish the bill with regard to a lot of things that have.
Right.
And I'm not sure.
Let me start with this. On line 2.12, strike the word expended and insert June 30th, 2017. That's the end of the biennium, so this money would be available for the biennium. Actually, on line 2.11 as well, after the word this, insert the word is. Just a typo there. We'll correct that as long as we're in the sentence. Any discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Okay, one little issue off the table. Senator Fischbach.
I'm just wondering, if we're just going to lay this over for possible inclusion, maybe I would just make the suggestion that instead of worrying about all of the definitions and everything, that we may ask council to work on that if it is included, because I hate to, you know, sit and nitpick when we don't know the outcome at this. But I mean, I was going to suggest potentially just for council's information is saying something to the effect of on a competitive basis, comma, with special attention given to rural Minnesota, because I'm getting the impression that the 50% is an issue, but I still want to make some reference to it so that there is. And then Senator Sharon had suggested that there come, you know, as we're looking at the report coming back, if we're expending until 2017, maybe they can report in 2016 and give us an update or something to that effect. But understanding that it's just being laid over at this point, there's time for us to work on some of those finer points of detail. So
I think that's a good idea, and I would, you know, try to work with members to make sure we don't have any surprises. And we can have this discussion once we've worked some of these things out with the author and with other members who are interested. That would be good by me. Ms. White, you had some other issues you said that we've talked about that might need clarification?
Yes. With regard to the amendment on 1.7, I guess I'll work on... Talk to Senator Fischbach and work something out. And
I'm comfortable with that, Mr. Chair.
And I don't think it ever got moved, did it?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't believe so.
Senator Eakin?
Mr. Chair, maybe we're getting beyond this based on what Senator Fischbach is saying, but just as far as the definition of rural, I know sometimes we've done programs for rural Minnesota where we just say those areas outside the 11-county metropolitan area, but we may be trying to go further than that because that could still lead to, of course, things just being in the regional centers. If you wanted to be outside of regional centers too, they'd be looking for a more sophisticated definition of rural.
And I'll talk, Mr. Chair, I'll talk to Senator Fischbach about what she wants to include in that rule.
Mr. Chair, just not the cities, that's all.
Well, but I mean, I think the point about the you know, just going to the regional centers, too, is not really a solution for the whole state. I mean, I serve a district with a great deal of super rural.
Well, and Mr.
That
Chair,
is
I mean, there's, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's
Senator Fischbach.
You know, there's some, with those smaller towns, maybe they could be sharing one unit, and, you know, and weekly, I see that there's some real potential for it in rural Minnesota, and we can't miss out on that money.
All right, that's exactly what
we
want to do.
I just will add one more thing on the geography thing. Another thing to consider, Senator Fischbach and others, and Ms. White, just adding another number under awarding grants, and specifically speaking, as one of the criteria for awarding grants be geographic distribution. Might be a simpler way to take it for now and then review it in 1 year to see what that caused to have happen. Okay. Then we'd still have some money left to really target if we're in the wrong areas.
Any other comments or questions of members? Anyone else in the audience wish to offer testimony either in support or opposition to Senate File 513? Seeing none, Senator Herr. So, Senator Herr.
Yes, Mr. Chair, we appreciate, and members, I really appreciate the lengthy conversation on this because this is very important. This is feeding the one that don't have accessibility, and the intent of this bill is to make sure that food are reaching the wide span of our state, not just the metro, but the rural, you know, further than that. And I really appreciate everyone adding in their comment. And so, the whole intent is to make sure that we have mobile to get the food to the one that are disconnected. So thank you. Thank you all for everyone's input. And I'm open to, you know, any modification for layover.
Thank you for that, Senator Herr. And, you know, I mean, I do know this is a big need to try to get the mobile units is a big deal. It was mentioned Family Pathways, which is very close to my district. I worked with them as they were developing their model, and it was a big challenge for them to try to come up with the startup costs to get that operational. And so if we can do this, this is a good thing. But to do it right is important. So with that, Senator Herr moves that Senate File 513, as amended, be recommended to pass and laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus HHS budget bill. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Yeah. Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Herr, and thank you, members. We stand adjourned.